So let's start then with the basic generic question I ask everybody who does this. How did this book, Love Before COVID, how did this make you feel?
I found myself disliking the characters, a good number of characters, and for a good chunk of time. It was interesting. It makes me laugh a little bit because there are some moments where I just couldn't believe some of the things that some of them did. And I enjoyed continuing on with it because sometimes it gets to a point where you begin to enjoy how unlikable some of the people are. And so there's a certain enjoyment in it. And then when I began to experience the inner monologues of some of the characters while they were talking to one another or in an argument, or sometimes seemingly in just a simple reverie they're sharing, but then you learn the secret thoughts of one of them. And I found myself laughing out loud because you just can't believe that that person secretly thinks this, or that they're actually up to this. And so I actually forget your question, but did I like it? And that's not your question necessarily, but
The question was, how does it make you feel?
you're right. It made me feel dirty because
Wonderful.
I enjoyed some of the badness. I enjoyed some of the unlikableness, and some of the words and phrases that were used in the inner monologues made me laugh out loud. So that was how I experienced it often. And because it was, look, I have a South Park sense of humor, and I'd like to think that I have a Buddhist morality. I don't know how they mix, but boy, I want a benevolent world, but this is not a benevolent world. L Love Before COVID is not, as far as I've experienced it, not really a benevolent world, but it struck me as real. And that mat I think that mattered to me, and it's that gave me the stamina to keep going because it was kind of intense at times. So
Okay. So, did this book, this rather intense book, which made you laugh and made you uncomfortable, did it seem like it was just a story about its characters and their psychology, or did it seem like it was saying something larger about the culture wars in which this book takes place?
People write things that are allegories, right? People sometimes write things that are philosophical treatises that are clothed in character arcs, character relationships, character growth. And then sometimes it's a blend. Because when you mentioned things that were kind of culture war-ish, right? Or maybe one could say cultural zeitgeist might be a more, I think, might be a better term actually, because it did not in any way strike me as a culture war book. Not at all. It didn't actually strike me as a polemic on any particular side. It was didn't strike me as a commentary on any particular ideological framework or culture war issue, but rather as a relationship situated inside the current unfolding cultural zeitgeist, which continues to unfold in real time at a rapid pace. And but then we're talking about body positivity, right? Joe and his I believe his Lorraine, I want to say,
Yeah, that's his girlfriend.
it really kind of goes after him and just really kind of plainly just states how fat, disgusting he is. And under I want to say under the guise of, but at the same time, it might not been in the guise of, but rather as a person who's frank and candid and wants to help him by just shining a mirror or placing a mirror there that's unpolished. And that, just really clear, actually, no, it's a polished mirror. It's completely clear. I'm going to see. You are disgusting. Even your sense of humor, even your art, your pretentiousness. I mean, she just lays it out for him. And one could say, although I don't recall that word being used, but one could say that she's being fat phobic. She's certainly not of the times and the way that she treats him. The degradation of the male comes in. And I do know that the term toxic masculinity comes in, and I'm just kind of bouncing around, if you don't mind. So, for example, Eve at one point actually questions whether or not her strong sense of maleness, that sense of strength and expansion, and she kind of gives her woman, her partner, Alice, a beat down several times, and not necessarily as an expression of her masculinity. But that does happen a lot. But Eve identifies with her maleness, but there are moments where she feels she's being toxically male. But I don't recall that being because she does the beatdown thing, but because she has a strong desire and need not to be a typical woman.
Yeah,
So,
those
yeah,
things
so there's a lot
will all come
of.
up as we.
Okay. So, yes, is this book, your question, I think, was. Does this book take place? Do I see this book as being written as a book about relationships between people, or is it a culture war book? I think is somewhat the way you framed it. I would say that it's an it sort of does. I want to say excavation. Certainly an archaeological dig into the deeper psychological underpinnings of relationships. That are simultaneously inside the cultural zeitgeist, which of course is surrounded by cultural war. That's how I see the book.
Okay.
Yeah.
And did you feel like the book was siding with any particular ideas or politics, or did you think it was pretty open?
That's a good question. No, I feel. It's funny, I used the word excavation earlier, and then I said archaeological dig, and now I'm going to use the word forensic because it felt like, in fact, I thought about this in rereading parts of it, is that when I say forensics, because that implies a really a vertical treatment of the characters, really getting into the nitty-gritty. And yet at the same time, there was a kind of a distance, because yet it was forensic, but there was a almost a professional distance, as if one were a psychologist writing about these characters. The willingness to, yeah, it felt like forensic, professional distance, cataloging the internal monologues without commenting on it. I did not feel a strong sense of commentary, did not feel a strong sense of moral commentary from the author. I definitely saw that through different characters. Like obviously Lena, one of the characters, had a strong moral compass. In fact, all of them, all the characters had strong moral leanings. They really did. Not a single one of them felt to me lacking in moral agency. Now, there are some who were victims, perhaps, of circumstances, and some of them were clearly victimized in certain places. But the moral justifications for certain actions were all over the map, and I did not find a particular slant politically or even psychologically either way. Yeah, I felt a strange sense of distance objectivity from the, the author's voice. That's my general sense.
Okay. So when we go to chapter one, when we first get into the book opens with a paradox. So you've got young Joe Pastorius, the protagonist of the book, who at this point, 2002, is a young, hot, hunky guy. He looks like Marlon Brando in the 50s. He's got an intelligent girlfriend named Janet. They both live in Leicester in the UK. But he's dumping his girlfriend because she's just been diagnosed as a psychopath. But the paradox is, she seems maybe like she might be a good girlfriend for him, despite being a psychopath. What did you think of Janet in the beginning here?
Well, Jen, in the beginning, we find out almost immediately that she's been diagnosed as a psychopath. So obviously, my finding that out about her already colors my perception of her. I'm already biased. So there's that. I guess I feel what's really interesting because this is very interesting. I found myself identifying with her. I found her to be a protagonist. I did not find Joe to be a protagonist. I actually found him to be an antagonist. That's how I felt. I felt he was unfair to her. I actually felt empathy for her. I felt not condescending empathy, but empatico empathy. Because we use the word psychopath, and we always, well, not we, not always, but it is commonly referred to as something that's bad because there's a lack of empathy in psychopathy. There's a lack of identification with the humanity of others. There's a lack of authenticity and truth. There's the willingness to put on masks in order to survive, to get ahead, to get what one wants, which I suppose only in a libidinal sense, because what does a psychopath actually want? If you don't have feelings, do you, how could you have desire? But it's a whole other conversation. So that for all intents and purposes, being a psychopath, she's a bad person and she's not human. And yet, I found myself highly identified with her. In fact, I actually had positive feelings towards Janet's character throughout the book. And I'm surprised to be saying it out loud because I don't think I realize it until your question, till just now. Partly because I know you have more to ask, but I want to just add that I feel that she made the case in a rather lengthy way throughout the book, actually, that she did all that she could to be what she felt he wanted her to be. And to her, that was as loyal as it comes. And if she felt deeply hurt that he would just drop her like a hot potato when she had done so much, she had performed kindness and he wanted her to be kind. But to her, the fact that she did that was, it was an extraordinary leap for her, a leap of faith and loyalty, and even maybe simulated, but hey, simulated compassion in current era is not so bad. So, yeah.
So when Joe was breaking up with her, even though that was quite unfair and cruel on his part, did you think she was also displaying red flags, or did you think she was just acting like a normal person being dumped?
I did not see any red flags. I don't recall seeing any red flags.
Okay. So it sounds like then that you found Janet, maybe up until and even after the point where she stabbed Joe in the eye, still quite sympathetic.
When she stabbed him in the eye, it was after he said that not only do I know I do realize I didn't love you anymore, but I don't like you. And I know that that can be, and now we know she's a psychopath, so we're supposed to say, well, naturally, this was she was not just not getting a narcissistic supply, but this was a narcissistic wounding. You know, there's a narcissistic injury, and so that was a reaction formation. So naturally, she, and I guess. It's just that I felt like she, it somehow just felt like she was hurt because it was hurtful, oddly enough. Yeah, oddly enough, even after, although I have to admit, I thought it was hilarious. And I think part of it is because cake fork, I'm American. I don't know. I don't just don't know the word cake fork. What is a cake fork? I know it's a cake fork for cakes, but it just maybe phonetically, it just sounds hilarious to me. Cake fork. What a thing to be stabbed with. It's embarrassing. It's almost more embarrassing than a spoon.
Yeah, you're right
You
about
know,
that.
I know. That's we're getting into sociolinguistics here, cultural linguistics. But hey, and so maybe, but the chapter ends very quickly after the stabbing, and she's running down the, and the voice, the sound of his screaming is being drowned out by the music, which is nice, for her. And then he was rushed away to the hospital. I have to say, which is so interesting. And then if the next chapter, you know, if it fast forwards at some point, some years go by, might have been less than, it might not be, it might not have been a long time going by, but she was suddenly a very successful person, a successful author. She had television appearances, panel discussions, and she was a commentator, and she had espoused and had promoted the most important and positive and good progressive causes that are certainly on the toppermost of the poppermost, as John Lennon would say, of the cultural current zeitgeist. She was the best. And she was so good that she turned people on sexually. They were clearly turned on by her, and there were, I think, one of the descriptions during one of the panel discussions that was televised that Joe was watching on television was one in which the other panel participants, there was a flirtatiousness to the back and forth, the repartee. And I, oddly enough, felt happy for her, which I found surprising because I've had run-ins with psychopaths in my life. I've been in the music scene, I've been in the art scene, I've been and as a writer, online commentary with people, and especially in education, which is just a real quick thing, is in the education world, they're flat organizations. So there's not a lot of advancement, really, not a lot. And so the normal push for gaining more money or promotions or more status, that doesn't happen in the education world as much. And those, they're, like I said, flat organizations. And so what you get is underhanded status games. And it kind of, you know, that kind of narcissistic, psychopathic one-upmanship happens on a regular basis. And what you get is what you get similar to what Janet became. You get, in order to gain that status, you have to sort of attain socially desirable traits. You have to be the popular teacher, the most progressive teacher. You need to be the most recognized professor. You need to be the one with the most applaudable beliefs, and that's how you get your status. And so I don't like psychopathic traits in people, and I've seen it up close, and it because what comes along with that is in order to get the status, you have to hurt other people. Reputation destruction, for example, putting on airs, putting on masks, lying, deception, all kinds of covert aggression, covertly aggressive behaviors. So, and yet somehow, I don't know why, I found myself, and that's what I think was a strength of this book, is that it actually kind of caused me to feel more empathy, you know, in general for people with, even though I don't think she was diagnosed, maybe she was diagnosed, I don't remember, with narcissistic personality disorder, but certainly psychopathy is somewhere on the spectrum of that disorder. But you know, they're narcissists are people too. And so are people with bipolar and people with social anxiety disorder who lash out and scream. I don't know. I just felt I got lost a bit here, but
No, that's good. That's good.
Stabbing, and the I did feel I continued to feel empathy for her.
Okay, so let's talk about that stabbing. So it happened because after Joe broke up with Janet in 2002, a year and a half later in 2004, his mother, Jody Green, was diagnosed with cancer. He gained weight at this point. He asked Janet to meet with Jody, and the two of them met up at Stone's in St. Martin's Square in 2004, a year and a half after their breakup, to talk about this meeting. And then they got into this heated argument about Joe's mother. And Janet was angry at Joe for forgiving her. And the argument spiraled out of control and ended with Janet stabbing Joe in the face and blinding him in his right eye. Were you siding with Janet during this argument? Because she was basically saying that he shouldn't love his own mother because she was, frankly, a cunt. What did you think of that?
She said that if I had my way, if I thought I could get away with it, I would have killed her. That's what she said.
Yes.
And she's already revealed that she's a psychopath. And we know that one of the traits of psychopathy, and we're not talking about somebody merely with narcissistic personality disorder or even narcissistic traits, a full-blown psychopath. And now we're not talking about what came out in about 10 years ago, the idea of the almost psychopath. We all have narcissistic traits, right? We all want to look good. I do. I'm not going to pretend I don't. Of course I do, right? I don't eat pasta as much as I used to because I can't anymore, okay? Because I don't want to be, right? So we all have parts of us that want to be seen in a certain way. We want to see ourselves in a certain way. I think it's important for me to acknowledge that because when you turn it up all the way to the red, this supreme self-involvement. But not even like really involved with yourself, but like others just aren't there. They're just objects. Because if you want to be looking at how you're being seen, then to the extent that that's turned all the way up into the red, Others are, in fact, nothing more than just things that give us something. They're going to give us a supply of admiration or respect or good or liking or just appreciation. That's not bad in and of itself, but when it's turned all the way up into the red, right, when it's, we call it digital clipping in sound engineering, it's harsh. What makes it harsh is that others don't exist, they're just objects. And when that's really the primary relationship, then there is no room for not just empathy, but even morality. What is morality? What does it even mean when something's just an object? You swipe it away. What, in fact, I believe that she probably would have, if she could have gotten away with it, why not kill her? And who is this her anyway? It's nothing. I found that Janet had a disgust towards his mother that was out of proportion to how bad she was. It was disproportionate disgust, disproportionate contempt. It was murderous. It was sadistic and murderous, not out of rage, but out of contempt. And so I saw that and felt it. And I suppose in a way it was not empathy for Joe that made Janice feel that way, but it was disgust itself, because the supremeness of her own greatness, I suppose. And yet, oddly enough, I don't know why I still continue to find her not necessarily. Well, I guess I was not really paying attention as much as I am now in this moment. So I guess, yes, she was in the wrong for wanting him not to forgive his mom, and certainly for wanting to kill him. But because for some reason I was still identifying with her in the larger conflict, which is that he dumped her for being a psychopath. So that colored my momentary lapse in my own judgment. So I now
Interesting.
know that she was in the wrong for wanting him not to
So,
forgive.
yeah, so his argument was that he wanted to love his mother even though his mother didn't deserve it, even though his mother had abused him throughout his life. And he felt that that's what love was, that love was about loving people when they don't deserve it. And she really, really disagreed with that. Did you agree with him?
Well, I can't reveal much here, but I've recently forgiven some people in my life. And it's a new experience for me. In the same way that I couldn't separate the book from its author, well, the book cannot be separated from the reader, very postmodernist, where I come to this and think, there is a spot for forgiveness, even by really bad people, because the very badness is. And the way that she treated him, his mother, Jody, I've seen worse. Sorry, I've experienced worse. And I don't think that he was in the wrong for wanting to, except for the fact that she continued to abuse him. I think he's in the wrong. That's a larger thing. As a personality, I don't. Joe feels to me like somebody who is. He gets accused of manipulation by not just by Janet, but by the later partner, Lorraine. He's manipulative in a different. It's a different type of manipulation. It's not really cunning. It's more of emotional manipulation of being a victim of being small. The other becomes a perpetrator. It's a very subtle thing. And there's a difference between thoughtful, conscious forgiveness and maintaining a relationship where you get to be, it's a power play in and of itself, but where you get to be the wronged one who gets to play the benevolence because it serves you. It serves your ego self in some ways. There's something l lacking in authenticity. It's not authentic. And so it does feel that, at least at this part of Joe's arc, that it's not genuine forgiveness. Therefore, she was perhaps in the right. It's just that I can't tell if her contempt for Jody, his mother, is because she just can't stand how awful she was to this man that she loved? Or why can't he forgive Janet, who really never did anything wrong to him? The only thing wrong she did was be who she is. And yet, in spite of who she is, she did all that she could to be what she could be for him. And I want to just remind you, if I could, not that you need to know, but I mean, and I was kind of surprised. I kept hearing her say this, and I thought, is she mean this or does she not mean this? But it feels like she meant it. She loved him. I believe that Janet believes that she loves him, loved him. I believe that she believes it. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, well, what does it mean? She talked about how they laughed together. She held him when he cried. When he was feeling anxious, she built him up. She put up with the small stuff because that's what you do when you love someone. So I believe that maybe when she says love, maybe she felt affection and enjoyment. And maybe that's not bad. And yet she gets to be tossed away like so much trash. But yet his mother, who was emotionally sadistic, which for me is, I have a hard time with people who are intentionally sadistic. Now, I know I'm kind of bouncing around a bit, but I don't recall Janet being emotionally sadistic. I might just not remember well, but I don't recall her conniving and seeking to be sadistic to hurt intentionally.
It wasn't anything like that in the book. Your memory is correct.
Yeah. And covert aggression like that, I won't lie, I loathe. I have a hard time forgiving. I'll just give you only generalities. You know, when I talked about having forgiven some people in recent times, one of them I forgave as a courtesy in the sphere in which we operate. And I will never speak bad of that person, and we'll continue to swim in the same sea, the same pond. And I will extend courtesy. I'll continue to do that, and I'll just keep going. But internally, there is a recognition when you show that to me, that the willingness to be malice, like intentional malice, not because you were wronged, but because you just simply enjoyed it. And you're willing to do and say things for the sheer enjoyment of causing harm, to cause emotional pain, to cause suffering. That's something that I don't think I personally am capable of forgiving. I'm capable of receiving it, seeing it, creating space around it, or finding the space around it to be able to coexist peacefully, harmoniously. And with Janet, yeah, I don't, because there was no, I believe that she, because she, what she had benevolent intentions. I want to find a way to be what this man wants me to be. And I'm enjoying being the thing that he wants me to be. And yeah, I suppose I could probably snap a cat's neck in half. Maybe she does it on the side, And so, yeah, I guess it causes, I have such an, I don't have ambiguity, which very, it's just, I'm very surprised that somehow I'm still continuing to feel that way towards her. But with Joe, he loses the argument somehow, because I don't think that his forgiveness of his mother was authentic. I don't.
Interesting.
At this point in the story.
What did you think of the fact that after she stabbed him and ran away, he protected her by telling the authorities that a drug addict had did it randomly, and he allowed her to basically get away with nearly killing him?
I know. See, again, I'm ambivalent about anything I say can be turned on its head. I feel that I was surprised in the moment that he said some random stranger, did it. I think he said it was a thief. But I felt that I would have done the same thing. I've done the same thing. I carry around wrongs, and I don't carry them around as much as I used to. I just, but I go to my grave knowing that some person did this thing, but then they didn't really mean it in the way that they did. That again, you can forgive people for things, and you can, you take this one moment and you freeze it, and you could destroy people. But then when you look at the larger gestalt, there's no real, it's not a moral act, actually, even though she stabbed him in the eye. And I know he did mention that it could have been a dangerous thing for him to protect her, because if you're going to protect her in that act, what's to keep her from doing that in the future? The question is, and this is maybe the thing that he may have been asking himself, which I don't think was explicit in the story, in the book, in the narrative. Maybe it was just a moment of callousness, or craziness, really, in her, and he goaded her. He provoked that. And she might, probably would never do that again. Probably never do that again. He may have been using that, logic for himself. But it was in alignment with his general character, though, which earlier I did say was, I don't remember the words I used, but that kind of manipulative victim complex. But again, that's a dark side of a gestalt, of a constellation of character traits with a certain, one could say a certain personality type. I do believe that there is such a thing as personality types, and there are different systems for grouping them. And I find a lot of, give me a moment here. That the word I'm looking for is commensurability between and among different typing systems. So let's just say, for example, that, and I'm not a psychologist. You're studying to become one, I know. So Joe could be, one could say, the passive aggressive personality disorder. One could say that he is the ambivalent type. One could say that he is a person who Karen Horney, or I think it might be Horney, but it's Horney, mid-20th century psych a psychology person, talked about the types that move away from people, move towards people, and move against people. And Joe is the type that moves towards people, but there's an ambivalence all the time with that.
So that's the first bit of the book when we get this relationship between Joe and Janet ending, and him gaining weight and losing his eye, but him protecting her. And then 10 years later, we get the next girlfriend of Joe, his hot girlfriend Lorraine Klein. And she is an interesting character, I suppose, because in some ways she is rubbing against the new culture that she is arriving in, because 2015 is sort of the beginning of woke. But she's someone who is very beautiful, and who you find out very early on in her dialogue with him, like within the first few pages, that she really hates fat people. So what did you think of Lorraine when she first came in the book?
Well, she reminds me of a friend I had. I still have that friend, but she cut herself off from a lot of people, including me. Not out of any malice, but she's always been like that. She's just in your face. She's just in your face. I have some pretty strong friends who are in your face. I used to be more in your face when I was younger. I still can be, but very rarely. And what I mean by that is not a lot of filters, not a lot of helping verbs, not a lot of dependent clauses at the beginning to soften the blow, not a lot of preambles and caveats, something I've become very adept at over the years because I teach higher ed during the woke world. So everything must have a caveat, everything must be ensconced and framed with, just let you know, I love and I have compassion, I swear. Don't light that match while I'm standing here with my hands behind my back and you're about to light me on fire. I have a caveat. Lorraine doesn't. And I feel like in that moment in Joe's life, Lorraine knows that he had already been in a deep relationship, had been in love. She knows that he had gained, okay, stones. We're going to talk about stones at some point because I asked you to bring that up and you didn't. That's okay. Stones. Anyway, he had gained some weight. We call them pounds in America. There was something. Oh yeah, he had an eye patch. I was going to look up the word cornea. Can you please tell me what a cornea is? Is it? I want to say that it's like shaped like a triangle. It's inside the eyeball, the little, the boiled egg eyeball. What's a cornea?
That's what it is.
It's
If
just a white
someone
one.
it's this. So if someone stabs that, it's
It's like
like,
the boiled egg. The boiled
yeah.
egg. Oh my God! I thought that fell out of his eye socket.
Yeah. Well, it burst open.
Okay. So he was not exactly the most attractive person on the block at that point.
No, he
Not
was overweight with an eye patch.
the Marlon Brando-ish 22-year-old strapping chisel-jawed man,
Not him.
but a schlub, a disgusting schlub. But I just found it really interesting because Lorraine enjoyed, and this is interesting. Earlier I talked about covertly aggressive, emotionally sadistic people. I know I'm going to sound like a nut job too. I'm probably more like Joe than like anyone else in some ways. Where I'm on both sides here. I somehow do not think of her as emotionally sadistic, which is a very strange thing to say. And yet she's so emotionally, she's outwardly emotionally sadistic, but she's not, it's not sadism. I don't feel that will come up later. Lena is sadistic,
Yeah.
right? Lorraine is, she's an asshole. She thinks being straightforward and being frank and candid is the compassionate act. She's tough as nails. She's in your face. She tells it like it is. She has no filters. She does. She just decides not to use them. She's intelligent and she's educated. She's not a person who doesn't know what's up. She's politically incorrect. She's insensitive. She's callously insensitive. She has not come home to herself. She's lost touch, and she has yet to connect with her true vulnerable humanity. That's how I feel about Lorraine. I feel like Lorraine is, I want to say she's like 31. Not to say that there's nothing wrong with being 31, but she strikes me as late 20s, early 30s. Hasn't quite been through the rough yet. She has not been processed through life. So she can be so callous and so and thinking and so smarmy and so self-satisfied with her telling it like it isness. Down the road, I see a person like Lorraine getting some humble pie, and usually it comes in the form of suffering, loss, probably deaths around you as well, loss of all kinds of things. She has not lost anything at this point. And I feel that she is full of herself, and she, but it's not really truly malicious. That's my general sense.
So it seems like on your view, she's not trying to hurt people. She's just not caring if she does, if she has a higher purpose, like helping you better yourself or lose weight or something like that.
Yeah, that's how I see it. Yeah, that's how I see her. That's how I think that's how she sees herself. Not, it doesn't mean that she doesn't have unconscious enjoyment too. I mean, she says nasty things to him. I mean, she goes on about it.
Well,
She
yeah,
doesn't have.
when she first brought up his weight loss after talking about how she wished she was close with her father at the beginning, and then she immediately goes to him and says, "You need to lose weight." And rather than do the typical thing of saying, "You need to lose weight because I'm concerned about you, I'm worried about your health, I think you'll feel more confident, blah, blah, blah," she actually pulls down his pants and taps his belly and says, "This is nasty. Your gut hangs out further than your erection. I can handle the eye patch, I can handle the man boobs, but this is disgusting." And then he starts to get a bit defensive, and then she really screams at him and says even worse things.
Yeah.
What did you think of her approach to getting her boyfriend to lose weight?
Well, it worked.
Yes, by the end it did. But what did you think of that approach?
I don't think it's helpful. It's really interesting. Again, you're talking to a person. You're not talking to a person. So my personal experience is part of my response. I quit smoking cigarettes in 2016, and I thought I wasn't gonna gain. I'm not gonna gain. I got a Fitbit and I went for walks every day, and it made no difference at all. I gained, and I became a different body type within like 5 months, and it was just awful. And I would run into people at like a liquor store or you just. I would just run into people at a restaurant or a street, and when it's happening to you in real life on an ongoing basis, like you don't notice like other people do. You don't know. You don't see somebody a couple months later, And I have to say, I still care. I think people enjoyed it. I think people liked the fact that I suddenly shifted towards, at least in my our culture, an undesirable, body type, at the time, and I was told, to my face, that it didn't really change me. I tried different things. I found what works for me now, which is good, but. For a while, I didn't know what to, I tried different ways to get back to where I once belonged, to use a Beatles song, it didn't motivate me. It just made me feel bad, and it made me feel embarrassed, frankly, and it made me kind of not want to be out and about. It didn't actually have any actual, and that's only one person's experience, of course. But there's some people that, they acknowledged it and, gave me advice, or there was, candor from some people who cared about me and, just gave me advice or just whatever. But there's some people who just like, they enjoyed it somehow. They liked saying it. They enjoyed it. And I didn't find it helpful. So, and it's interesting. I have friends who are larger than me. I have friends who have always been larger than me. And it's one of the things I've been reluctant to talk about openly, because I didn't want my friends who were always people of size, we call them now, but who had always been, overweight. I didn't want to go on about it when it's like, it's sort of, I felt insensitive to them. To complain about an experience that they've always known, right? So again, as a reader, I'm bringing my own experience to your question. So that's just my own, but I'm also an educator by trade, and I've known many students all my life, and I actually teach a composition class in which I use an article that my students and I read by a woman named Roxane Gay, who's an intersectional feminist, a Black woman. And she, it's a, I forget the name of the article, the essay she wrote. It'll come back to me. But it's an essay in which she talks about what she calls, I'm using her words, she uses the word fat, and she also uses the term fatness. She uses the phrase body positivity. She uses the term fat phobic and fat phobia. But she talks about her Blackness and her fatness, but it's her fatness that gives her the most grief. It's the most difficulty she faces in terms of bigotry in the world around her is because of her fatness. And in this piece, she actually talks about how she actually had weight loss surgery, and she talks about the history of that. And so I go going on about this, it's like, I think it's cruel and unnecessarily cruel. And I think that overweightness is not always because someone's sitting there eating pizza and cake all the time. The body changes when you, as you enter certain decades. For many people, I don't know how many, I don't know the science behind it, but a good number of people naturally, they're going to experience a change in the metabolism. For me, quitting smoking, it just happened. It wasn't like suddenly I became a pizza guy. It just happened. And so there's also other medical reasons for people being overweight. And so it's not fair for her to have treated him that way. I think it's frankly, I think it's disgusting. But then again, if he was, I forget how you worded it in the writing, but he did actually adopt some eating habits. He did actually eat for depression. So he did have some bad habits. That's actually that. So I so maybe he needed the more of the tough love. I don't know. No. I mean, in the end, I just don't think it works. I think it's unfair. But then again, I don't know. Sorry, on the fence again. But
Okay.
generally, I lean towards not being cruel.
Okay. Well, also in that same discussion, Lorraine starts to insult his friends. She insults his friend Jill for being ugly and Claire for being bigger than he is. And that's when, for the first time, she kind of explains her philosophy of being fat. And Lorraine says that Claire, for instance, is selfish because she expects men to be attracted to her, even though she wrecks her body with food. And this is selfish and unfair and disgusting, because if you're having sex with someone, your job is to try and arouse them And if you're making yourself fat, you're not living up to your end of the bargain. What did you think of this argument from Lorraine?
I think that's fair. I had a partner I was hanging out with for a bit, and then he told me straight out, what can I say? That's the way it goes. Reality is reality. And I didn't think that's fair. You can't expect people to be attracted to you just because you read it in a book somewhere. They either are or they're not. It's called wisdom. Wisdom includes being with what truly is. Now, that's where I part ways with the cultural zeitgeist at the current moment. You cannot shame me or moralize me into being attracted to you sexually. You can't. And just not going to go with it. Sorry. No.
Interesting. So you think that this kind of fundamental position that Lorraine holds about someone like Claire, for instance, being selfish, being overweight, and then expecting to get laid, that that's correct? Do you think that's right?
Well, expecting to get laid from a partner or just in general?
In general.
Yeah, no, see, from your partner, I guess there's a little room there. It's like, come on, honey, I know I'm fat, but come on, we're married. Let's do it. All right. But to expect to people, no, I'm sorry that I guess I'm revealing my political. It's not a political position. Just because other people made it a political position does not mean it is a priori. Did I pronounce that correctly? A priori?
Yes, that's correct. You did.
Things you read, but you don't know. Yeah, it's not a political statement, but I know that it can be seen as that by people who themselves ideologicalize everything, which is that if I say that it's you cannot force people. You shouldn't walk around expecting everyone to be to be attracted to you, because by them not being attracted to you, they are, it is now de rigueur, did I say that correctly, to say that you're racist if you're not attracted to a black person, or if you like Irish guys, or if you're interested in women who are really skinny. It just turns you on like really bad. You just don't know what to do with yourself. It's like drives you wild. And then some people are, they really are just really attracted to the certain skin tone of a certain type. Some people are actually very much attracted to very dark skinned people. Some people like bony cheeks. Some people actually like the round look. It's just real stuff. And it's up. It's natural. It's right as rain, and it's unprocessed, authentic attraction, and you can't legislate that, and you can't ideologically contain it and frame it and control it, and it's wrong, I think. I mean, we shouldn't. I think it's fair for norms. I think it's fair for us to endeavor not to create environments that are shaming and that make fatness disgusting, or blackness disgusting, or whiteness disgusting for that matter, or men are evil or bad or gross and all that. Men are pigs, all that stuff, and so it's not really fair for us. I don't think it's fair for a classroom to have a even a college level classroom to have an environment where we openly say that fat is disgusting. So we make room for people to be attracted to what they're attracted to, but we also don't want to go down the road of stigmatizing body type, stigmatizing different sociocultural identities and characteristics. So she's an asshole. But to go around and to presume that you somehow are entitled to people sleeping with you when you are, letting yourself go in such a way that, statistically, a lot of people just, I'm sorry, statistics bear this out. They're just not going to be into you. And how dare you suggest that they should be? It's like forcing gay guys to like trans women or trans men. Come on. Come on,
Okay.
people.
So another thing Lorraine says in this same conversation is she says to Joe, who at this point is overweight with an eye patch, she says, Being with a beautiful woman isn't easy. You have to be strong. Most men aren't strong enough, and that's why they don't get what you have. They settle for women they're not attracted to. What did you think she meant by this?
I don't know. It's hard work being with a beautiful woman, right? Is that what you're saying? She said.
Yeah, it
I mean,
sounds. Yeah.
it's hard. It must be hard work to be with a partner who's a 10 and you're like a 4. I mean, because then you're comparing yourself with that person. You're wondering whether or not you measure up. You don't know what they see in you. You know that other people are going to be talking and like, how the hell is she with this schlub? And so it is hard work because you have to maintain, you have to, it's like you're in a way, you're a walking PR situation. It's a public relations problem pretty much 24/7 whenever you're out. If you're somebody who has concerns that are social oriented, some people don't care at all. Like they really don't care. Some people are They're wired, their instinct is more aligned towards self-preservation needs. Or they just don't care. But for many people, social status dictates that being concerned about what people are saying about your coupleship matters. And in those for those people, I can imagine that the partner who is less attractive conventionally would feel that's hard work to keep up, to maintain. Or even and one of the ways that that's hard work is pretending that you don't care. That's work, man. That's like, to use feminist language, that's emotional labor. Continually putting on the appearance of it not mattering, continuing to pretend that somehow you don't notice that, man, you were a 4 and this girl, this man, this boy is a 10, and pretending that you don't notice that other people are talking about you and wondering why you could possibly have the opportunity to be with someone like this amazing. That's emotional labor. It's taxing. It's awful. Yeah.
That's an interesting response. So do you think Lorraine is a vain woman?
Yeah. I have some people in my life, they always comment on how someone looks. And I can't really judge them for that because I look at people and I notice their complexion and I notice this one is youngish, this one's kind of older, this one is aging differently, and we all have those. I surely do. I just don't fixate on it. And in a way, and this is actually partly because of some other reasons, practices that I engage in that are more towards, just wellness in general, just being a person who's aware. And that is, you look at people with a soft lens. Not a hard lens, but you soften the focus a little bit, take in the gestalt of a human being, or even of a puppy, or even of an environment, hard focused, intense focus on the details and fetishizing that, and then adding a judgment to it and that labeling, it concretizes and crystallizes the other and subjectifying, and it is vanity because by doing so, you've propped yourself up as the person who gets to adjudicate the desirability and the goodness of this person, or whether or not they measure up to your standard, your ideal. There's a few people in my life who are just, you can just see it, and that they're judging themselves in the same kind of intensity, and that it never ends. And there's some people I'm like, yeah, I don't really feel like being around that person. Not because I need someone to constantly say, oh, Steve, you look so good. You got it down, man. You lost weight, I can tell. And it's true, I have, but also your face doesn't look like it did last time I saw you. Like some people, they just they're focusing so much. Where you just don't feel like being evaluated, whether it be even in positive evaluations, you just don't want any of it. And I do think vanity is not vanity. We often think of as I'm good looking, and I want to make sure I'm continuing to be good looking and well into the age of 80, and I'm constantly obsessed over my appearance. Like that's a really a superficial definition of vanity. I feel I think another definition or larger one is the obsession of comparison. Where one must always be, if not the object of admiration. One can stand in judgment on whether or not someone else reaches the standards that they too are worthy of admiration. It's constant, and it is vanity. And I think she's very vain in that way. I actually don't remember what she looks like. My sense is that she's probably not that hot. I don't remember.
Interesting. Well, there is some room for interpretation. I mean, you can disagree with the narrator who says she's beautiful. You can think she's maybe more self-inflated than is deserved given what she actually looks like. That's a possible interpretation too.
Oh, I can't remember. I can't visualize her like, and I can visualize, for example, Lena and Davis, you know.
Okay, well, we'll get to that. So when we get to the end of the first section, Joe is masturbating to Davis for the first time, a feature character in the book. And he's also at the same time, he's talking to himself about why he shouldn't be upset at Lorraine, because he's unfortunately having to look at Davis so he can get an erection that night when him and Lorraine have sex. And at the moment, he can't get an erection for Lorraine despite her beauty because she's hurt his feelings. But he's saying things to himself like, I'm so lucky to be with Lorraine. We've got a beautiful home. We're going to have beautiful children. So many men would be jealous of me. So, do you think he was being delusional, or do you think he really is lucky to be with Lorraine?
No, I don't think he's delusional at all. There's a couple of the things to add to that. I think is that sometimes sexual desire is not what helps to function properly in the sexual arena. For some people, and perhaps for everyone to some degree, being desired is erotic. It's important for some people to feel desired. And she didn't just hurt his feelings. She made sure that he knew that he was disgusted. And to be in a situation, a sexual situation with somebody who's disgusted by you, it's, I mean, I'm not a psychologist, I'm not a sex therapist, and I'm not a porn star. So I, you know, take what I say with a grain of salt, but I think that probably most people have a degree of autoeroticism where one can imagine oneself being sexually desirable to others, or one can imagine oneself not being desirable to others. One can actually step away from oneself and look at oneself as an object and determine whether or not one has desirability. I'm used speaking obviously in very mechanistic terms, almost like clinical terms. That's just me having been alive for several decades. It's not really an educated opinion. And so he's disgusted by himself, and you know, gee, you know, and that's just not erotic. When you think that someone's disgusted by you, I can't imagine. But of course, I have some degree of, like a human, like any human being. I don't know. I can't imagine that. There's another thing though. I didn't really answer your question, I don't think. Can you repeat your question? Because I wanted to add.
You actually you did answer it.
Oh, okay. Okay. There's a second part though, but it's okay. We
Yeah,
can
you
go
did
on.
answer it very well. So then we're at the end of the romance section, the opening of the book. So we've got our two main women in the book, Janet and Lorraine. So Janet's a psychopath who stabbed Joe and disfigured him for the rest of his life. Lorraine is beautiful, not a psychopath, has never been violent as far as we know up until this point in the book. But a lot of people think Lorraine seems a bit worse than Janet. What did you think?
Yeah, so wait, so wait. Well, it sounds like I do think that. I mean, I think by now it should be clear that I like Janet more than I like Lorraine, which is not fair because I'm more like Lorraine than I am like Janet. Well, internally. Well, it's we have our private selves and our public selves, right? Which is not a bad thing. It's a necessary thing, right? When we if you're a store clerk, that's a public self. It's natural. And right now we're being public selves. Like we're having a dialogue and there's a genuineness going on, I'm sure. But there's a performance aspect in that we're leaving out a lot. Like I'm intentionally not using swear words. There are some personal identifications that I have with some of the things I just talked about that I'm not going to share. There may be personal experiences I have that could further illustrate my understanding of questions that you're posing, but I'm an educator by trade, and no, I'm not going there. It's just this week. That's the way it's going to be until I retire. Then we'll talk. I guess what I'm saying is, so Lorraine, okay, the reason why I mentioned earlier, I just said about how I can identify, is that Lorraine is sort of the me before I became more polished.
Okay.
I used to be so much more, I mean, I used to be so much more confrontational. I used to say things like, I tell it like it is. I used to be proud of, I laid into this one and I set this person straight. Ha ha ha. Yeah, man, you know, fist bump for that. I put them in their place. And I used to take, you know, when I was much younger, and it's when I didn't, you know, have compassion for myself. The need to be strong, the need to be the one, the need to triumph. I call it ego triumphalism. That is a young person thing, or an immature thing. Some people who are older can have not yet matured at all, who might still have that. So, whereas Lorraine, I'm sorry, Janet, yeah, I keep going back to that television, even though it was just that one moment on television that Joe was watching her, but looking at the books that she's written, you know, she was pissed that she didn't have a publisher, did not publish. She wanted the first choice of publisher for her new book, chose not to, and it annoyed her, you know. So she had that slick, polished self that wants to be associated with the more cream of the crop publishing company. And so, right, I know, I get it, and I dislike polish, elegance, and you know, just prim and proper, or overly dressed language, and all the things that I am myself as a writer, and as an educator, and as a, when I present publicly on ideas, I am all that. But and so I have a natural proclivity to want to identify with Lorraine and to see her as the good person. And then it's not fair that the polished person who stabs people in the eye, or who probably, you don't really show a lot in the book about the things that Janet does on the side, but I guarantee you that if she is what she is, she does a lot of evil stuff to get where she is, where everyone's, you know, salivating over her. She's so articulate, she's so amazing. But we know the things she did to get the, you know, she's not the only most beautiful. There are many beautiful, charismatic, intelligent, thoughtful people who could have been where she wound up, giving talks, being celebrated, probably getting awards for her social justice advocacy. And but a whisper into the ear of somebody, right? The uncouth, tell it like it is, people like the salt of the earth, the grunts like Lorraine. That's kind of me, really, in real life, you know, and I know that. One sees that peeking out anyway, in my work anyway, but generally speaking, and I think most of us really are more like Lorraine than we are like Janet. So why is it then that I, and you mentioned earlier, it seems like others are more loath to, we don't want to give Lorraine the shot that we want to give Janet the thought, but I'm going to tell you why. Because what's, maybe it's the bad writing. That was a joke.
That's fine. Could be. Go on.
Don't get anything from Lorraine. There's no vulnerability. Or at least I didn't pick up on it. I didn't pick up on any vulnerability, like none. And then Janet, I got that, and I can have empathy for people who have vulnerability, and I show this. And I it, that's actually, again, we're talking about the reader now, because the reader's bringing what the reader brings. It's that's not that, that that's consistent with what I said earlier, how much I can't stand and loathe people who are intentionally sadistic just for the sheer enjoyment of it, the intentionally emotionally abusive behaviors, the covert aggression of narcissistic psychopathic people. I really loathe, okay? And Janet, because of the vulnerability piece, I have empathy for her. And with Lorraine, I can, as a human being who's been alive for a while, who's developed a little bit in his life, I feel, I know that somewhere inside, perhaps not only somewhere, but it's very close to the surface, we could probably tell that Lorraine has a lot of depth, and she has a lot of concern and compassion and empathy herself, and she has vulnerability and fears that she doesn't really open up about. So I could learn to have empathy for her, but somehow I don't.